takes only not only a talented writer, but a keen observer to bring us right into a story and setting, whether it's a fiction or a memoir. Jerry Apps has done that for many years now, and we're lucky that he has a brand new book out for us to enjoy and reflect on. Larry Mueller here. Jerry Apps is a storyteller, author of many books, including Campfires and Loon Calls, The Horse-Drawn Days, Garden Wisdom, Lessons Learned from 60 Years of Gardening. His most recent is Limping Through Life, a Farm Boy's Polio Memoir. It's published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. I finished reading it and really can highly recommend it to you. And Jerry, with me in the studio. Jerry, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, Larry.
I really appreciate it. Well, Limping Through Life, it tells the story of how you contracted polio and how it affected you. That's a very personal kind of
It is. Humor. It's a story that I, for many years, didn't want anybody to know. And my my editor, Kate Thompson at Historical Society Press, urged me along the way. She knew the story. I shared it with her, and she said, "You've got to write that, Jerry." And I said, "That's the last thing I want to write." Yeah. And I finally got around to doing it, and here it is.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. And while I'm thinking about it, there may be some listeners out there who suffered polio or had or grew up in that time period, or at least knew about it, especially back in the 50s. That time period was a scary one for a lot of families. I hope you'll join in with your own questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. It really was kind of a scary time, wasn't it?
Yeah, I got polio in 1947, in January of 1947. And my as people who know me know that my hometown is Wild Rose. But we grew up on a farm. I grew up on a farm, and the farming community, along with all of the other communities, were just beyond belief for freight. No one understood where it came from.
Yeah.
And it, the neighbor kid half mile away died with polio, and that really got everyone's attention. And soon, by the late 40s and into the early 50s, the hospitals in the area, and Wild Rose had a little hospital at the time, were just packed with people who were suffering from polio. The Salk vaccine came along in 1955, and that, of course, put the kibosh on the disease. But still, there are a bunch of us around who are polio survivors, and, well, we have stories to tell.
Yeah, I can remember. Of course, I was grew up on a farm, too, and the neighboring, our good friends and neighbors had polio insurance. I guess a lot of people had polio insurance, and they finally got to the point after a time where they just couldn't afford it anymore, and as soon as they dropped the policy, then one of the sons came down with polio.
Yeah, it. I will never forget the. We had a couple of meetings with Dr. Haddon, was the doctor at the Wild Rose Hospital at the time, and he once he decided that it indeed was polio and my right leg was paralyzed at the knee, he said to me, and I've never forgotten this. He said, "You are really lucky," and I couldn't. I was 12 years old. I couldn't imagine any luck in having a paralyzed leg. And then he said, "Because you're not dead."
Yeah.
I've never forgotten that.
Yeah.
Because so many kids, and it tended to affect young people. A few adults got it along the way, and it was even more devastating then. And it was mostly boys, more boys than girls got it, although lots of girls got it as well. And it tended to, the paralytic type tended to paralyze the lower extremities, legs, more than anything else. And, of course, then the other kind that was prevalent was the bulbar polio, and that affected the respiratory system. And folks who came down with bulbar polio ended up in iron lungs, which were just gruesome devices that were designed to help people breathe. And a lot of those did not survive.
Unfortunately, I can remember visiting with my aunt, someone in the hospital had an iron lung, and I was just a little kid, and it was scary. I'm sure it had to be a lot worse for the person who was in it.
Yep.
We have lots of opportunities for you to join in, by the way, with your own questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. What was known and not kind of known about polio at the time?
Well, people were familiar with the flu, and it was, I think, in 1918 that the influenza killed millions of people all over the world. And people were familiar with that, and they knew that the flu was transmitted orally through the air. And some people thought that would be the case with polio, and that wasn't. The fear was just unbelievable, mm-hmm. because people just didn't know. And kids would get it. I got it. No one else in our country school got polio. My twin brothers didn't get it. Mm-hmm. So it was just a mystery. And the more of a mystery that it was, in many ways, the more devastating it was, because it just people did not know what to do. The county fairs were canceled. All 4th of July events were stopped. I don't mean it to sound like a pun, but it paralyzed the community as well as paralyzed a lot of the victims.
Yeah, absolutely. And you were a farm boy, you know, so you had some roles before polio that.
Well, farm kids were expected to work, and here I'm 12 years old, and I'm supposed to be driving the tractor and helping with the farm work and all that sort of thing, and I'm grousing around the house, worst possible person to be around, I'm sure. I should quickly mention that polio not only affected the person who had it, but it affected a lot of other people all around that person, including the family. And my father finally couldn't put up with me anymore. This was in April, right about now. And my dad said, at that time I was feeling halfway decent, except my leg just didn't work. I couldn't walk. I could hardly stand up. And he put me on the tractor. And he said, somebody's got to help disc the corn ground. And most people know what that means. And so I'm on the tractor. Now, we had a Farm All H tractor, mm-hmm. 1943 model Farm All H. And it had the front wheels are close together. And in order to turn, especially in soft ground, you had to use the brake pedals. And the brake pedals were on the right-hand side and the clutch was on the left. And you push the brake pedal pointed in the direction you wanted to turn. And I could not push anything with that right leg, which was paralyzed. And my dad's got me on the tractor, and I'm pulling the disc, and we're going across the field, and I'll go down this little hill. And our farm was sort of sandy, and the ground was pretty loose anyway. And here I'm coming upon the wire fence. And anybody who knows about fencing knows it takes a lot of work to put in the posts and string the wire and all that stuff. And I'm coming down the hill, and I know I've got to turn, and I start turning on the steering wheel, and nothing happened. And I couldn't, my leg would not even reach the brake pedal. And before you knew it, fence posts were flying, wire fence was breaking, and my dad was running across the field. Well, I thought I was going to get a chewing out like you couldn't imagine. And he didn't say a word. He just said, get off the tractor, and I did. And he got on, he turned it around, and he didn't even mention the broken-down fence, and he said, get back on the tractor. And I said, I can't turn. You'll do better next time. And I was so angry with him, I tell you. But that was the therapy that made all the difference. In 2 weeks, my leg was working well enough to run the brake pedals, and I avoided tearing down any more fence. He also, each night, oh, my knees just hurt some fierce. He used Watkins horse liniment. He figured Watkins horse liniment was good for about anything that ailed animals or people, and he rubbed on my knee a bunch of that horse liniment, and it was hot stuff. I think there's red pepper in it. I don't know what's all in. And he would rub my knee every night, and of course that somehow he knew. My dad had a fifth grade education. He didn't know the fancy stuff, but he knew when things didn't work that you had to do something about it.
Yeah.
And with this knee not working, he was bound determined he was going to make it work, and he did. Well enough for me to drive the tractor, at least.
Jerry Apps, our guest today, talking with him about his latest book. It's called Limping Through Life, A Farm Boy's Polio Memoir. It's published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. Great to have him along. Thanks for listening in. If you have a question or comment, maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Some callers online. Let's go, Jenny. Let's go to Jim first here in Reedsburg. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Yes, thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm a polio victim. 1950, when it was at its fury. I was one of six kids on our block that got it.
Wow.
And I know. I know Jerry's feeling. Mine was my left leg. It's still my left leg. Mm-hmm. It's still not a very strong leg. But I was one of the luckier ones. I got it the end of summer, and 2 months later, on my birthday in November, I got out of the hospital, and that was the end of it for me.
Yeah, I was one of, as I think back at it, very fortunate. Our hospital was full. I think I mentioned that before. And so I never spent a night in the hospital. All of this was done at home. But it was, when you look in our little Wild Rose community in Washera County, there were all kinds of victims. And the Fox River Valley, Oshkosh, Needham, and Ash up toward Green Bay, that area was had one of the worst incidents of polio in the country. So Wisconsin was not spared.
Yeah, no, it's no. And Jim,
my experience was in New York, in Buffalo Niagara Falls area.
Yes, it was all over the country. No question
about it.
Thank you, Jim. Yeah, but you survived. You made it.
Yes, we're here.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Jerry Apps, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Gabby Padreani, our on-air producer today, as we talk with Jerry about his book, Limping Through Life, A Farm Boy's Polio Memoir, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here, my guest, Jerry Apps. Author, his latest book is called Limping Through Life, A Farm Boy's Polio Memoir. I finished it about a week ago, and I'm telling you, I really enjoyed reading it, and I think you will as well. You get a chance to take a look at it. I hope you do. Jenny in East Troy, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. I was born in 1949, and I remember in the 50s hearing about it, and we had the vaccines at our little school. They came and gave the vaccines, and one of my classmates had gone to a little country school, but when she came into the school in town, she wore a brace because she had had polio as a young child. My concern is nowadays often people are bypassing the all sorts of vaccinations and immunizations. And I know with my granddaughter, they hasn't been immunized. And I don't know if we can get more of a public educational, informational campaign. I guess they just don't realize what a danger. They feel that polio has been eradicated, that, it's not a danger anymore, but, I don't know what your thoughts are about that, but I'm real concerned about that because traveling and just being exposed to different things.
It has not been eradicated. That's a myth. We may think it is, but African countries, especially several African countries, polio is on the rampage. And there, as you correctly point out, the vaccine is available, but people have resisted availing themselves of that opportunity. And, of course, that's true in this country. And I, well, one of the reasons I wrote the book, I suspect, is to help encourage people. And I try to do it without preaching. I try to do it through example. Who would want to go through what those of us who experienced polio went through? I don't think anyone, once they know through, and I do this through stories. I'm a storyteller. Once people hear the polio victim's story, I don't think they would resist a prick in the arm that would prevent them from getting polio.
There is a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of misinformation out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's yeah. Talk to any medical person and they will tell you what is what about, especially polio vaccine.
Robert in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Pardon me for being a little bit, I'm a little shy, so here goes. I was a polio victim in 1946, and I was born in 44, so I was 1.5 years old when I got it.
Wow.
And I spent my early years in Madison Children's Hospital at the University of Wisconsin. And so I've been a Madison resident ever since I was that old. It was in north central Wisconsin. It was between Eau Claire and Wausau. It was a community called Owen Withy.
I know it well.
Yeah, I do too.
And we lived in a small town called Longwood. Mm-hmm. And once I had a number of procedures done at the in Madison at the hospital, I was then sent home, and all the kids in the elementary school would crowd around me, and like I was the big hero who traveled all over the world. But you know, I was in Madison, and the only world I saw there was a TV set, and yeah, when it was on. And when I was home, I also was farmed out to the farmers.
How were you affected?
Lower leg, lower right leg from the knee down is atrophied, and the foot itself was, the bones were frozen to create an arch that helped me. And I have to wear, even today, a brace. For a while, I didn't wear a brace, but the ice would always nail me because I couldn't arrest myself when I slipped, and I was always on the deck, and with that brace, it's really helped me.
How are you doing now? Are you experiencing this post-polio syndrome effect?
I think about it a lot. I come to the local meetings every once in a while. I go to the meetings on my bicycle. I don't like driving the car anymore. The brace that I have prevents me from manipulating the gas pedal in a way that would satisfy me, and I'm only relegated to the automatic stick shift. And so I'm on a bicycle, and I love it. I love it because it gives me the exercise.
You know, the bike helps you, too.
Yeah. My knee and up, I have muscle, and so I've been getting around.
Yeah, well, good for you.
Good for you, and thank you very much for calling, Robert, and sharing your story. I appreciate it very much. We have other stories as well and some experiences for people who want to share with us. Larry Mueller here with my guest Jerry Apps, author of Limping Through Life, a Farm Boy's Polio Memoir. And Jerry, before I forget about it, you'll be in about a week from today.
April 30th, I'll be at Barnes & Noble, the Madison West Side, and I will be there at 7 p.m. and sharing some of my stories about polio and hoping that, hoping we'll have a crowd, because it's a story that, and I should be more humble about it, but it's a story that needs to be told. People need to understand, I believe, what polio was all about, and the fact that it has not been eliminated. That message needs to be shouted to the rafters, because we have, well, there are a bunch of us who can attest to what polio has done. And also, people, if you want to look at my website, jerryapps.com, JerryApps.com, I've got there several reviews of the book already, and other information.
Yeah, that would be a great place to go. Just a good place to go anyway. It's a great website, jerryapps.com. And, you know, for you, it's not only the physical part of it. I mean, it's more the mental.
Well, this is the part that a lot of people don't understand. They see people limping around, and I'm one of them, and I'm using a cane these days. And they say, well, what's that all about? And I said, I had polio. Well, that's too bad. You seem to be making it all right. What people don't understand, and that's true not only of polio, but that's true of other kinds of diseases that prevent people from doing what they ordinarily would be able to do. But for me, experience of polio, beyond the physical, the emotional, the fact that when I was 12 years old, I couldn't play baseball and I couldn't play softball, I couldn't play basketball, and here I was a worthless little kid. If you're on the farm, and you're inactive, you can't hardly walk, and you see everybody else doing what has to be done, and when you're in high school, and I was just starting high school, and you see all the kids doing what boys ordinarily do, and you can't do it, you end up feeling absolutely worthless, and you go in two directions. You either pity yourself and you just let everything slide, or you do the opposite. You overcompensate for that. And I've been an overcompensator for years. My wife gets so disgusted with me. She says, my gosh, when are you going to think about retiring? And I said, oh, I have my plans on retiring. And so you end up trying to do more than you ordinarily would do in order to show people that, by golly, you're not as worthless as you might think. It's goofy how that works, Larry, but that's my experience.
Well, it actually, for you, it wound up, you wound up writing for the school newspaper, something you probably never would have done.
I wouldn't have. No, here, and it all started when I'm not able to do the sports, and I had this wonderful teacher, Paul Wright was his name, and he suggested that maybe I should take a typewriting course. And I said, that's the girls take typewriting courses, boys don't. Well, he said, well, you might find that interesting. So here I am in a class of all girls, me, and we're on a manual type. We're all on manual typewriters. And I found that, by golly, I was milking cows by hand in those. And my arms never were affected very much. I was milking cows by hand, and I had really strong fingers, so I could type like everything. And before you knew it, I was the assistant editor of the school newspaper, and then I was the editor of the school. I had a staff of 12, Larry, working for me, reporters reporting everything, and I'm pulling all this together. I mean, what a great sense of power for this worthless little farm kid whose leg didn't work very well.
Oh, great story. Barbara and Madison, we turn to you next. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
Yes, what's on your mind?
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
When I was a child, we lived in a small town. I do remember the swimming pool and the movie theaters closed during polio season. And we had a combined first and second grade. I was a first grader, and the second grade boy sitting next to me had polio and used the long metal crutches up his arm. And at recess, we would play soldiers and crawl along on the ground and use them as rifles. But we came to school one day, and he had died, I think, of pneumonia. And they loaded every child in the school on the buses and took us to the funeral home. Nobody asked the parents. Nobody told the parents.
Wow.
They just took us to the funeral home to see him.
Wow.
And I remember that so clearly because he had a little suit on and he had blue house slippers. And it just, I still remember that to this day.
There are a lot of stories like that.
Wow. I think if that happened today, Well, it wouldn't happen. I couldn't imagine that.
No, it wouldn't happen today. They would talk to the parents about it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that story. It's just another one of some kind of heart-wrenching stories that we've heard already this morning. Bill in Richland Center, your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Well, good morning. I was born in 1950, and I remember going through, say, the vaccination and how it consumed the community and the various people that were got it. My question is, so many of us are removed from it now, how was it transmitted? Is it a virus? And then I'd like to ask your guest when he knew he was getting polio, I mean, how it affected his body and how quickly or slowly, and that he lost feeling and use of his leg in some aspects of the disease itself.
Sure, I'm glad to do that. It's a disease that's transmitted through the stomach and the intestine, and it is transmitted through poor sanitation, not washing of hands and all of that sort of thing. That's what they finally figured out. As far as I'm concerned, my early symptoms were a severe sore throat and a headache that I just had never had before in my life. It started out with a fever, and my mother initially thought it was another cold, because colds were common, still are. But by within a couple of days, my leg was already paralyzed and just hurt like everything. And that continued for, that pain continued for, I don't know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, way longer than it ought to have, in my estimation. And then it seemed to subside. The pain subsided. The headache had disappeared and the sore throat left. But the paralysis remained. And my knee was bent at about a right knee was bent at about a 45-degree angle. And no matter, you could grab hold of, as my dad did, as I mentioned earlier, you could grab hold of my foot and try and straighten out my leg. And, oh, my gosh, it was the most painful thing in the world. It would not straighten out, because those muscles were all messed up at the time. So that's how it was with me. By the time this happened in January, and by April, you remember the story I just told about being on the tractor. Well, what is that, 4 months, I was able to at least walk. A lot of people go through this, but I had to learn how to walk all over again. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. At age 12, I'm learning how to walk again.
Yeah. Thank you, Bill, for calling. Don in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. Hello.
Back in 1951-52, I was a graduate student at UW-Madison, and I needed money. I went to work what was we now call university hospitals as an orderly full-time. And one of my duties was, if necessary, to go into the ward where all these polio patients were. And they brought some of the difficult to deal with polio patients to Madison, because it was, you know, a chief hospital in the state. And it really almost terrified me to go in. I had to go in with a mask and that sort of thing, and I was in there frequently. The most devastating part of it one day was that the operator from the hospital called and said, you need to go in because you have two children from the same hometown who've just died. So I had to take these bodies of these two little children from that unit to the morgue in the hospital.
Yeah.
And it impacted me all my life to see all this suffering. And of course, there was a fairly high death rate. That's the nature of polio. And then, of course, of the people that are particularly brought to this central hospital in Madison. And I don't know, the experience still rings all these years later as something which caused me to have sympathy, and I have a great deal of concern. I do like to see medical research done, and of course we did get a Salk vaccine ultimately to deal with that. But it's just terrifying sometimes, and terrifying to me as a farm boy originally, a lot of inexperience, and then going in and dealing with death like that. But I still think of it all these years later.
Yeah. Well, I thank you very much for calling, Don. I appreciate your call. And, you know, we've heard a lot of very kind of sad stories, and your story in some ways is sad, but in many ways, but it's also kind of uplifting for me. The book I enjoyed very much.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, this business about feeling worthless, I was bound determined that I was going to try and do something that people would say that kid wasn't as worthless as we thought he was. And so I've tried to do a lot of things. I ultimately was a professor here at the university. I have been a writer for more than 40 years, and I was in the Army Reserve for 10 years. I buffaloed an Army doctor into believing that I was perfectly fit. I never told him I had polio. I limped a little bit, and he didn't seem to care. This was the Army.
Yeah.
The Air Force and the Navy would have been more concerned. The Army, this is Korea. If you could mostly stand up, you were
pretty good.
You were a candidate.
Oh my goodness!
So I'm pleased with how it all turned out. Now I was blessed with several things. My head worked still pretty well, and I could type, and I have a decent voice. So all of that helped. I was announcing basketball games when I was 14. Years old. This same Paul Wright pushed, he felt sorry for me, put a microphone in front of me, and he said, Jerry, why don't you announce the basketball games? And so that's what I was doing. I had a microphone in front of me at age 14.
And through school, I really enjoyed your stories of high school, but also college too. You stayed in this. You had the same one room.
Well, we were so gall darn poor on the farm. We'd lost our herd of cattle the year before I was to go to college to brucellosis, and we just had nothing. And so I'm down here in Madison in my room with $5 a week, and I stayed in that same little room for 4 years, and I came to like it. My breakfast, I had the sweet rolls and orange juice during the fall and winter between the storm window and the regular window. That was my refrigerator. I vowed that I would never pay, I think, more than 75 cents for a meal, and then only once a day because I was poor. We didn't have any money.
A lot of times at Rennebaum's drugstore.
Yeah, that's right.
And you had, I enjoyed hearing about your jobs. You worked in, was a music.
Oh, director. I did not know a bassoon from a violin when I, as a farm kid, I listened to the WLS barn dance. I mean, I was a guitar and banjo guy. And all of a sudden, I got a chance to work at the music school setting up. Can you imagine this? I set up the orchestra. I did not know one instrument from the other. And the S.T. Burns was the chair of the music department in those days. And I guess he felt sorry for me. And I worked.
You had that job for quite a long time.
Long time. I worked 40 hours a week at that job, 50 cents an hour in those days. And my favorite part of it, I was in charge of smoking and smooching in the practice rooms. And what does that mean? I assigned music students to the practice rooms. That was a building on Park Street. It's torn down now. And I would walk by the rooms, and once an hour I was supposed to do this, and I would smell to see if I could smell any smoke. And if there was a tap on the door, say, you can put out whatever you're smoking. But even more exciting was if it was dead quiet, because then I knew something was going on in that room that was not musical. Or maybe it was musical, but in a different sense of making music. And so I would politely say, yeah, cut it out, go some other place. And I never busted anybody in these years I worked there. So the music students, they all loved me. But they also knew that I was on patrol.
So you held that job for
long
3 years.
Oh, long time. That was one of my favorite jobs.
Oh, and you were the first person in your family to go to college,
right?
I was.
Yeah, my mother had a seventh grade education. My dad had a fifth grade education. And the idea of going on to college was, the idea of going to high school was a mystery to them. The idea of going to college was unbelievable. The idea of spending time in graduate school was absolutely unknown. I had an uncle who said to my father one time, he said, Herman, Where did you go wrong? And my dad said, what do you mean? Well, you let your son go to college. And he says, the only reason that anybody goes to college is to get out of work. For Uncle Fred, it was physical work, work. He didn't understand that. And then when I got a master's degree, he said, Herman, I didn't know your son could get out of any more work.
Oh, man. You know, Jerry Ann in South Milwaukee wanted you to mention the work of, and you've mentioned this to me off air, so I thought it was well worth mentioning, work of Rotary International.
Yeah, Rotary International has a wonderful reputation and continues to support the eradication of polio worldwide. And they need to be supported and applauded and encouraged because they do good work in that direction. And I will be doing some work with Rotary and helping people understand from a very personal perspective what polio is all about.
And once again, you'll be at Barnes & Noble, Madison West, on April 30th, so that's just a week off.
Yeah, at 7 o'clock. And go to my website if you want more information than you ever wanted to know about Limping Through Life and a bunch of other books.
JerryApps.com. That's the web. JerryApps.com. Jerry, it's always a pleasure. I'm sure you're working on another book.
Of course. In fact, coming out this fall is a book called The Quiet Season. It's about winter on the farm.
Oh.
And Wisconsin Public Television is doing an hour-long documentary on that very topic connected to that book. So that's all coming out in December. So those who have seen Jerry Apps' A Farm Story that Wisconsin Public Television produced, this will be the second installment.
Jerry's, well, obviously we'll have you back for that for sure. Thank you so much.
You are welcome.
Jerry Apps, what a pleasure to talk. I tell you what, I really look forward to every visit and every book that he brings out, and the latest is no exception. It's called Limping Through Life, A Farm Boy's Polio Memoir. It's published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. Appreciate him being with us today, and thank you for listening in. You know, it's kind of the rare person who hasn't been touched by cancer. We've talked about polio now. I'm going to talk a little bit about cancer. Any cancer diagnosis is frightening. Brain cancer feels like one of the most hopeless, but there are some wonderful programs to support not only the patients being treated for cancer, but their spouses, their children, and all their loved ones as well. Because even when you're dealing with a serious medical condition, it's important that everyday life feel as normal as possible. And our next guest will be talking about that here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us.